The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is a visual Bible resource. Lutheran Bible Companion contains more than 600 photographs, illustrations, and detailed maps that bring to life biblical times. Find out more about Lutheran Bible Companion at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Lutheran Bible Companion, The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You might find this on your calendar, a kind of a note of history. It might not seem that significant. The founder of the Salvation Army, that you know, you see it. At times of disaster, there they are. You hear the bell ringers. I can't go to the grocery store from Thanksgiving on till Christmas, and they've extended the time past Christmas, without hearing the bell ringers. They are collecting money, they're collecting clothes, they're there in times of disaster. They have all sorts of ways of serving people. It's a service organization, it's a charitable organization, the Salvation Army. Well, its founder, William Booth, he was also their first general. We'll have to figure out what that means here in a second. He died on this day in 1912. What is the Salvation Army now? How did it begin? Was it ever a church? Is it still a church if it ever was one? Joining us to talk about the Salvation Army, Dr. Alvin Schmidt. He's professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College, and he's co-author of the Encyclopedic Dictionary of Cults, Sects, Religions, and the Occult. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me again.
Well, your business is classifying organizations like this. You have actually made a career out of classifying organizations like this. So how would you well, let's start with the Salvation Army today as it exists. Is it a cult, sect, religion, or the occult? Which is it?
Oh, it's certainly not an occult. It could come close to a cult, but I wouldn't be comfortable in calling it that either. It doesn't consider itself a church. It doesn't call itself a church. But yet it has many Christian doctrines and also omits some very significant Christian doctrines. So it's kind of an anomaly, if you might say, in terms of what we generally understand as denominations or Christian denominations. They would not quite, I don't think, feel comfortable in being classified along with Christian denominations. At least I've never seen them say so. And it's a question of, you know, in terms, let's say, for example, two significant things stand out when we look at Salvation Army's teachings closely. Number one, they do not require an individual to be baptized. Now, that's a very significant omission relative to Christianity. They also do not practice the Lord's Supper in any form or fashion. They believe, for example, that the person's life is supposed to be sacramental, and that you don't practice ceremonies or ordinances, what they would perhaps call in terms of baptism or the Lord's Supper. And there are, when you come become a member, commonly first called a soldier, you are not baptized, but many of them who have come were baptized in some other denomination and fell away, or they were baptized as children. And so that's not a problem to them. They don't ask you to renounce that, but they don't ask you to affirm it either.
So who was its founder, William Booth?
Well, William Booth was a very interesting individual. He was born in 1829 in Nottingham, basically in poverty, and although not the most abject type of poverty. And he was very early in life taken in by Methodist teaching. He grew up in a Methodist background and very much was concerned about people who were down and out in poverty, alcoholism, in basically all the social deviant behaviors that happened in the poor part of London where he had moved to later in his life, the eastern part of London, where he gathered individuals together. And he was a famous preacher in many ways. He also frequently suffered physical violence when he was preaching before he became famous. And he was a type of individual who did not give up. And then when he, at the upper 20s, became married, his wife was probably a big of a help as he was himself in helping him maintain his goal of helping the down and outer, so to speak. He was very much influenced by Matthew 25, chapter 25 in the Gospel of Matthew, that Christians should live their life. He was very much opposed to the institutionalized church, which he said, and to some extent he was right, were ignoring those who were in need of help, giving the poor food, drink, housing, and so on and so forth. And so he basically, even after a while, separated from the Methodists, and they kind of didn't mind his leaving. And so he basically formed his own organization, and given that he felt he was sort of fighting in an environment against evil, he called his organization, initially he didn't, it was not called Salvation Army, but after a while he called it the Salvation Army, and then he took military terms to describe the organization. In fact, a convert to Salvation Army teachings is initially called a soldier. So there you have a military term. And he himself then was the general over the entire organization. And that is still true today. The Salvation Army has, on the international level, one general. And then they have commanders, another military term. So basically, that's the framework he took, the model from the military, because he felt he was fighting an enemy, the enemy of Christ, the enemy of the institutionalized church that ignored the poor and the downtrodden.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we got another 10 minutes with him talking about the Salvation Army. We're talking about it today because its founder, William Booth, died on this day in 1912. How did it go from being what we've described here so far, and we'll describe a little bit more on the other side of the break, to kind of a, well, not just a quasi-religious, but at least in public perception, a very marginally religious organization. Doing a lot of good out there, but a marginally religious organization. Stay tuned. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The Gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the Gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
This is Pastor Miller of Trinity Lutheran Church in Bay Ridge. We preach, teach, and confess the historic Catholic faith. For a refuge from the pop spirituality and shallow preaching that swirls about in our day, come to our haven at 9020 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn. In addition to Mrs. Solano's Sunday School at 9:30, we have liturgy at 11 a.m., followed by a fellowship meal and Bible study after the service. You're invited to come and be a part of Trinity, a biblical and sacramental church. Visit trinitybayridge.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're talking about the Salvation Army with Dr. Alvin Schmidt on this Wednesday afternoon, August the 20th. Dr. Schmidt, most people are exposed today to the Salvation Army as they go in and out of some sort of place of business. For me, it's the grocery store. They hear the ringing of the bells, they see the volunteer, they see the red kettle hanging from the hook. How did that come to be so strongly associated with the Salvation Army?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It was not a creation of William Booth. It was an American innovation by a Salvationist. By the way, the Salvation Army people often are referred to, and not in a negative sense. In fact, they themselves use it in their own literature as Salvationists. It's not a term that we typically hear. But in 1891, a Salvationist, member of the Salvation Army, in San Francisco, began the use of the red kettle to collect money to, and he was going to give, and he was successful in doing it, collect money so they could have a sit-down meal. Well, that, as you know and made reference to it, has taken hold very widely. And it's not only practiced in the United States. It is now practiced in Korea, in Japan, in Chile, and in many European countries. So there is another kind of thing that had become part of the Salvation Army. And as a result of it, most people tend to see. In fact, I have asked Salvation Army individuals, are you comfortable with the fact that most people see you as a charity organization rather than as a Christian organization or even as a church? They said, no, it's sort of a two-edged sword because we're really both. But anyhow, in the minds of the public, I think I'm not overstating it, it is not seen as a Christian organization, really. It is basically seen as a charity group. And as a result, all kinds of people, including non-Christians, speak very highly of it because of its emphasis. And here I might say, going back to my emphasis that I've made many, many times about how Christianity changed the world, is an example, again, even though they're not what you would call Orthodox Christians. Nevertheless, they have very much changed the world in terms of having given a positive view of charity. And charity, as I've mentioned before, in the Roman and Greek society, was not a practice. It was not known at all. In fact, it was seen as something that was below the dignity of human beings to help those who were down and out. Well, Christianity came along and changed that, and Salvation Army is an example of that, although different than what was done in the early years of Christianity in the Roman Empire. And so the charity thing, the red kettles, is another thing that examines it. I might also mention, in 2001, a very important book was written on Salvation Army by a person by the name of Robert Watson. And Peter Drucker, on the cover of the book, said, and I'll quote, "The Salvation Army is by far the most effective organization in the United States. No one even comes close to it with respect to clarity of mission, ability to innovate, measurable results, dedication, and putting money to maximum use," end of quote. Now, most people may remember Peter Drucker. He was a management consultant of international fame who died only a few years ago. And so that's his estimation of the Salvation Army, and it has amazingly done well. It's very bureaucratically organized, again, using a military structure, so to speak, but it's very, very successful, and not only, for example, in North America, but internationally. It's all over the world, and it's highly respected as a result of it. I might also mention that when Booth died, initially, as I said, he was often physically accosted and came home with bleeding marks on his face and so on down the line. When he died, as you mentioned, today is the date, August the 20th, and he died in 1912. 150,000 people filed by his casket, and 40,000 attended his funeral, including the Queen. And he's become known as the Prophet of the Poor. And so he lives on, and by the way, American presidents have honored him, and he continues to hold the highest regard, and as a result of it, largely still do, because the organization is very efficiently run. It is divided, by the way, in terms of military units again, of divisions and territories under the divisions. And we live in the central division here, which is basically headquartered in Chicago. But there's quite a large building on Hampton in here in St. Louis, where the I think they employ about 60 people in that organization. So again, it's a highly organized, efficiently run organization that has not let bureaucracy choke itself, choke it to death, so to speak, as often happens.
Now, with regard to its teachings, there are two that I wanted to ask you about because you ran through them rather quickly, the things that they reject in terms of kind of historic Christianity. There is one of the hallmarks of the Salvation Army's teachings. If you read through their beliefs, they're pretty kind of standard Wesleyan beliefs. They're reflected in more conservative Methodism and things like that. But they do also pick up a kind of Christian perfectionism.
They do.
If you're looking
much
at their theology, that should be of concern. What is it and how would you describe it?
Well, it is very much that they really don't quite distinguish between faith and good works, basically, although they don't say it as such. But here's the Methodist influence that comes about, that the holiness emphasis, it must be present. And I don't know how else better to explain it, but it doesn't quite stop that man is saved by faith without works. It very much, and in some instances not too far off, when it captures on Ephesians 2:10, which is the verse that we often forget. We stop at Ephesians 2:8 and 9, but then Paul says that we're saved by faith to do good works, which we don't deny, but sometimes our members tend to not quite get that latter part of the message. And I might mention one or two other things that's interesting. They have basically 11 doctrinal points. They also believe in eternal hell, eternal punishment, which today does not sound very popular, as many denominations no longer even preach about hell. So they do not deny that. And they also, for example, basically argue that the individual is governed by the Holy Spirit to be obedient to Christ. And that comes back to the question that you asked a little while ago. And now, as is not surprising, they are being slowly attacked by the gay rights movement because they've had some statements in the past and what they're going to do with them or not that did not honor the homosexual lifestyle. So that's something to watch.
So can we talk about Salvation Army as an organization, a charitable organization that began originally as distinctly religious, perhaps a kind of in the category of a sect of Christianity, but now has become simply a charitable organization with religious historical roots, still has beliefs on paper or at the website, but in terms of their everyday operations, not necessarily a major emphasis of anything they say or do. Is that a good way of describing Salvation Army?
I think so, but you know, you have to remember that in addition to the official membership, they very often use the term, let's say, of people who are supporters and helpers of theirs, who are not members as such, who are not soldiers of the organization, are often seen as the army behind the army. And this in many ways is part of their success. They have a lot of people. Well, for example, the people that go and toss in coins at Christmas time in the red kettles would be seen as part of the army behind the army. Wherever individuals are supportive of giving contributions, either in actual physical help or in terms of monetary support, are seen as the army behind the army. And so there again, you have basically an emphasis primarily on the charity aspect, although at the same time, you could not become a member if you were not known to profess Jesus Christ. But it doesn't require baptism, and it doesn't require sacramental participation in the Lord's Supper and the like. And the fact it doesn't require baptism makes it an anomaly in terms of the whole Christian context, because one thing that all Christians have recognized...
About 20 seconds here.
Yes, that you need to be baptized, as Christ told us in Matthew 28, to the disciples, to go and teach and to baptize all nations. And so they are an anomaly, I would say.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and co-author of The Dictionary of Cult Sex, Religions, and the Occult. Dr. Schmidt, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Speaking of service to your neighbor, there's a great new organization called the Lutheran Youth Corps. If you're a recent high school or college graduate, you're taking some time off of school before you start school or before you start that career, and maybe you're still making up your mind about that career and your future. Spend that time productively in service of your neighbor. Life together through witness and mercy. The Lutheran Youth Corps. Find them on the web, lcms.org/youthcorps, lcms.org/youthcorps. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Dr. Lane Berglund about numbers in the Bible. Begin a series with him. I mean, numbers are all over the Bible, aren't they? You open up the Bible, you see chapters and verses. Are those significant numbers in the Bible? Some people think they are, sad to say. What about the other numbers? Do all the numbers mean something? Is it a code that we need to crack in order to truly understand the secret message of the Bible? And the numbers that are there, like 3 and 4 and 7 and 10 and 12, that reoccur all over again, what do they say about God? We'll talk about that with Dr. Lane Berglund tomorrow on Issues Etc. and Do Christ in the Old Testament, Isaiah 51, with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps.